Charlie White testifies. Will the recount commission believe his story? Planned Parenthood cuts back. Dick Lugar criticizes the president's plan for Afghanistan. And African-American leaders criticize Mayor Ballard. That plus more layoffs at the Star, a huge donation to Wishard Hospital, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 24, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Secretary of State Charlie White testified before the State Recount Commission he didn't take the Fifth Amendment. White defended himself against charges of voter fraud by telling the commission that he moved between three residences in 2010 and essentially lived in his car. His wife and his ex-wife backed up his story. When asked why he didn't update his voter registration to reflect his circumstances, he gave this answer.
Frankly, it just didn't cross my mind to update it. My life was a blur that entire year and a half.
What will the recount commission do? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, was Charlie White believable?
No. No, he wasn't believable. And I'll tell you, while he was talking there about signing it under penalties of perjury but not reading it and all, I was thinking to myself, who would hire this guy as an attorney? You know, I assume he passed the bar, but boy, it's not reflected in his testimony. His problem here is, you know, he can say what he wants about his intent, okay? But when his actions are inconsistent with that intent, it's the actions that control. And if they make that decision on something other than a partisan basis, they'll throw him out of office.
Even if he was honest, he gave some interesting answers. He said that he didn't know that if he moved out of his council district when he was serving on the Fishertown Council, that meant that he had to give up the seat. That's troublesome for a guy who was the county chairman.
The part about that answer that did make sense was that when you vote in Fishers, as I understand it, everybody in town votes for all the districts. So it's really like serving at large. So you're serving the whole town. Well, it is. I mean, that's do you know?
But you represent a district.
Any place else where they do it that way? I mean, I don't.
But he was on the council when they drew the districts, right?
Right. But right. You know,
and
so
he admitted that he knew
answer.
He had to live in a certain district to run.
Yeah.
So.
But I thought those people that I heard that watched the thing in its entirety, which, of course, I couldn't give it that much time, but said he did a pretty good job and that he gave better answers than they thought he was going to give.
I think the bar was low.
Right, because everybody's been beating on him pretty good. But his wife and his ex-wife both collaborated the story that said that he lived in the ex-wife's house four nights a week, five nights a week. I mean, that's an amazing thing to me.
It is amazing. In fact, it's incredible.
But they both said it was. So that's three of them that say that. And well, what's interesting to
three
me,
of them are incredible.
And the irony of this is that the Evan Bayh case may end up being one of the things that are pointed to, that residency is in the eye of the beholder.
That's not true.
It's true. It is absolutely not true,
Michael, the point of this is it's not what your intent is when you take action.
Believe me, it will be before it's over.
I know the law and you don't.
Well, of course you do. You know everything and nobody
else
knows.
Let's see what Nikki Kelly knows. This was a day-long hearing, and Nikki, you did sit through it.
I did.
What did you take away from Charlie White's testimony?
I mean, he had some plausible explanations. I do think the petitioners, the Democrats, missed some opportunities. He was saying, you know, I didn't live at the condo with my fiance. But at the same time, if you looked at what he told reporters back in September when this first came out, he said, I moved into the condo in March 2000, 10, and I just forgot to update my thing. And then the story completely changed to, no, I never intended to live there till I was married. I didn't move in till May. So I think there were some, they should have gone after him a little more on inconsistent statements.
Well, and speaking of inconsistencies, after these charges first came up, he resigned his position on the Fishers Town Council and paid back the salary that he'd earned. I mean, it looks like he's created a moving target.
Well, this has been a moving target all along. It won't stop anytime soon. I think regardless, unless the Recount Commission decides to remove him from office, this will continue to go forward. And I'd be really surprised if they do, for the reasons that Ann suggested. I don't want to presume what the outcome will be, but it's two Republicans, one Democrat on the panel. And, you know, the answers were just muddied enough that you can probably find what you need to justify a vote in favor of Charlie White. So this has been a very curious case from the start, because it didn't seem to add up. His actions early on seemed to indicate that he acknowledged that he'd made errors here. Then he went in the complete opposite direction. Charges were then filed by a special prosecutor. Now we've got the Recount Commission. This thing has been a moving target all along, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
So if you're on the Recount Commission, this is a difficult call, and you also know that there's a criminal case out there, so that if he has actually broken the law, somebody else is going to decide that. Mm-hmm. So it's a big step. It's a big step to throw a guy out of a statewide elected office.
Well, for the two Republicans, it's a big step to throw him out of the statewide office, but the evidence warrants him being thrown out of the statewide office. And frankly, if you wanted to minimize the damage from this, that's what you'd do. Because otherwise, this is going to be the gift that keeps on giving for reporters from now until well after the trial, because the trial is going to go forward, and they've got him on the criminal charge, because he can say what he wants. He can't say, I swear under the penalties of perjury that I live here. Oh, I didn't read it. I didn't read it. I didn't know what it meant.
So what do you think the commission does?
I think the commission leaves him on, because it's going to be a straight partisan
this
vote.
This will be decided in the courts. I don't think there's any question about that, because the law is so vague.
Oh, no, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not. And he is vague, but he's stuck with his actions.
You know, it is interesting that, by not resigning, this has gone on a long time. And I think many people probably would have resigned when the pressure was ratcheted up, as it was. The pressure on him before taking office had to be incredible. And he's withstood that pressure, much to the dismay of his own party. But it's going to run its course.
But he would still be, from a personal perspective, smart to see if he can cut a deal for for the reduced penalty to protect his license and make sure he doesn't.
Well,
go
that's
to jail.
Why he stayed in office. I mean, isn't it? I mean, that's a big bargaining chip that he has.
Yeah. Well, he only has it until he's convicted.
That's
the
criminal case.
Set for trial.
That's the criminal case. We get the answer from the Recount Commission next week. We'll probably talk about it here again. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, how long will Charlie White be in office? 49% said weeks, 28% said months, 23% said years. This week's question is the newspaper industry headed for extinction? Your choices are A, there will always be newspapers, B, daily home delivery will soon be a thing of the past, or C, they will exist only on the internet. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. More on newspapers later. But first, Planned Parenthood of Indiana closed its clinic for a day this week and instituted cutbacks required by the new law that cuts off public funding. CEO Betty Cockrum appeared on Mike Ahern one-on-one on MyIndy TV this week as she awaits a federal court ruling on a request for an injunction. She continues to make the case for taxpayer funding.
That we're the single largest provider of reproductive health care, and we're able to help women figure out what's the right thing for them to do with their reproductive planning decisions. And we have adoption counseling services on site at our abortion sites, because that's a very important consideration for women to make when they're looking at what they should do about a troubling pregnancy.
Mike McDaniel, would Planned Parenthood manipulate this situation in the effort to show that it's been harmed?
Look, nobody can blame Betty Cockrum for trying to protect her organization. I mean, that's what she's doing here. I've known her a long time. She's a good person. She's doing what she thinks she has to do. But portraying this thing as if they're the only people that can provide these services is absolutely wrong. I mean, there are plenty of places people can go to get these same services. And they've tried to portray this as if these are the only places that are left in Indiana to go to. There are only 28 of them, and there are virtually hundreds of places where people can go.
All right. They're waiting, Planned Parenthood's waiting for a decision from federal judge Tanya Walton Pratt. Another federal judge, Sarah Evans Barker, heard another challenge also from the ACLU this week to the state's immigration law. And that, it looks like Sarah Evans Barker doesn't like what she sees in the state law.
Well, if you are familiar with the U.S. Constitution, you wouldn't be, you wouldn't like what you saw, because the people who passed those two pieces of legislation don't care about the Constitution except for the Second Amendment. That's the only thing they care about. They don't even care about separation of church and state, and they certainly don't care about any other provisions. So Judge Barker's absolutely right. It's unconstitutional.
Well, she hasn't ruled yet. She hasn't ruled yet, but she's raised questions.
But she's right to raise the questions, and right. I think it is unconstitutional, at least in those two sections. You can't. The state of Indiana cannot decide who is a citizen of this country, okay? They can't. And in addition to that, they can't abrogate treaties that are made on the national level. And if you bothered, or if you had some attorneys who knew what the law was, and obviously there aren't enough of them in the legislature, we wouldn't even be having these battles and spending this amount of money to try to protect legislation that's unconstitutional.
Well, this is unusual, two federal court challenges to newly passed laws.
Well, it is unusual, but you also have a big turnover in the direction of the legislature with the House coming in and having control for the first time in many years and a large majority and an agenda to take on what it had seen as the status quo. So, you know, the courts haven't decided yet. They appear like they may have exceeded the bounds, but we won't know until the courts rule. And it's not a surprise. I mean, they were going to test the limits, and we'll find out what those limits may be depending on what the courts determine.
Any predictions?
Well, I think on the immigration thing, if you just judge based on her demeanor during the hearing and her questions, it seems like she certainly thinks the state overstepped. In general, I want to point out that I think part of this also has to do with the way the session went in the big walkout. I've seen more badly drafted laws or with errors or things we're going to have to come back and fix, things that we knew might be legally questionable, but we just pushed ahead this session than I've seen in the past.
Because it was done in a hurry after the walkout ended.
Yeah, and they were trying to cram everything in there at the end, and some things clearly got missed.
I think I should point out, too, that Sarah Barker was appointed by Ronald Reagan. Okay, so, I mean, you've got a case over there in the legislature where you have the inmates in charge of the asylum, and that's showing up repeatedly in the legislation. And it's a waste of time and resources, but it's not about the statutes. It's about scoring political points, just like Cantor walking out of the budget negotiations.
The problem with this is that the agenda that you keep criticizing is probably supported by more Hoosiers than you will ever recognize.
And if we have more Hoosiers that don't agree with the
Bill of Rights, my point is that you may be the one that's out of touch with this.
Should we repeal the Bill of Rights?
You may be out of touch with what
the Bill of Rights is. The Bill of Rights, Mike.
President Barack Obama this week announced a plan to bring thousands of servicemen and women home from Afghanistan.
Together with the Pakistanis, we have taken out more than half of al-Qaeda's leadership. By 2014, this process of transition will be complete, and the Afghan people will be responsible for their own security. What we can do and will do is build a partnership with the Afghan people that endures.
It's a plan that's been widely criticized, and among those first to criticize it was Indiana Senator Richard Lugar, John Ketzenberger. Is Lugar going out of his way to be at odds with the president?
I'm not going to say that because, you know, I don't know. I will say that Lugar has in the past gone, he has been at odds with many presidents, and, you know, beginning with Ronald Reagan in his views on foreign affairs, and he's an acknowledged expert on foreign affairs, and so I am hesitant to say that he's doing this for political purposes, if that's what you're getting to. Now, you know, the challenge that he faces from Richard Murdoch would lead some people to believe that that's the case. But given his history and his seriousness about foreign affairs, I'd be really surprised.
The Murdoch challenge is fueled by people who were bothered by the fact that Richard Lugar was cited as Barack Obama's favorite Republican when he ran, and the fact that the two of them teamed up on legislation in the Senate. Does it seem like Lugar is taking different positions as this election approaches?
I don't know necessarily. I mean, when he and the president teamed up on things before, I mean, they were fellow senators and colleagues, and I do think it's different now that Barack Obama's the president and he's leading the nation. I think, you know, obviously Senator Lugar is going to have some differences with that. And I mean, when they're in the Senate, they just find some common area they agree on and they can focus on that. Now, there's a whole lot more going on that he has to comment on.
Whether he's being consistent or not, Richard Lugar is speaking up a lot more now than he has in the recent past.
Well, he's clearly been the go-to guy on these issues for a long time, so it's not unusual that people would ask him his opinion about these matters. He did not criticize the president for withdrawing troops. What he says is that he's arguing about the fact that the policy doesn't seem to be well formulated. He thinks we ought to be out of the nation-building business. He thinks we ought to be concentrating on Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia and places where terrorists are harbored. Where the Afghanistan nation-building thing at $1 billion or $1 billion a week is a lot of money to be spending. And so his criticism on the president, on foreign policy, has gone because the president no longer seems to collaborate with any of the leadership that have experience in these issues.
The answer to your question is yes, okay? The answer is yes. He is tacking to the right. He's tacking to the right just because of the fact that Richard Murdoch is out there cultivating, and because the Tea Party people are in control of the Republican nominating process.
If that's true, can that be problematic for him? Can he lose his base by doing that?
I don't think there's many places for the base to go. They're certainly not going to go to Murdoch in the Republican primary, and that's what his biggest challenge is at the moment, is getting by the Republican primary. And I think if Barack Obama said today was Friday, Richard Lugar would say no, and we'll do that between now and November. And it's ironic that he's being criticized. The way I read the criticism is it has a lack of vision to it, okay? Well, who got us in there in the first place without a defined set of what the goals were going to be and what victory was supposed to be and everything else?
Another president who disagreed with Dick Lugar. Lugar's been consistent in his criticism of the lack of mission,
of course,
when it comes to Afghanistan.
Well, he'll still
moving
tack to the
on.
Right.
Mayor Greg Ballard came under fire this week for failing to know who heads up the local chapter of the NAACP. The answer is Crystal Ratcliffe. Here's what the GOP mayor said on the radio show Afternoons with Amos.
Have you, as mayor, ever sat down with the president of the Indianapolis NAACP?
We went to breakfast together. I don't think I've sat down with him in a discussion.
For the mayor of the 12th largest city in America to not know that the president of the local chapter of the NAACP is a woman, and then to assert that you have met with him, is an affront to our community.
Completely partisan. That's all this is. It's just political. It's just completely political because they don't understand that we've really been trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, the mayor there, preceded by Stephen Clay of the Baptist Ministers Alliance, Nikki Kelly on the gaffometer. Rate that gaff from 1 to 10.
It's pretty high. I'm going to give it an 8. I realize that Crystal Ratcliffe hasn't always been the president of the local NAACP, so maybe he got confused or forgot when she took over. But, I mean, he just handed it to him on a silver platter on that one.
Is it forgivable? The NAACP doesn't have all that high a profile in this community at the moment.
Well, that may be what is at work here. The NAACP may be trying to reassert itself in the dialogue, if you will. The NAACP has been an historic leadership organization. The mayor, and I'll agree with Nikki, I think it was a pretty big gaffe, and to then turn around and say it's all politics doesn't help. The mayor should have known that a woman heads the NAACP, just as he should know the heads of all community organizations in the course of being the mayor. Is it fatal? I don't think so. I think that he needs to make amends and to make it clear that he made a mistake and he's going to move on.
Democrats aren't going to drop this.
No, because it is a very substantial. It's not just the gaffe. It's not just, and it's not just the trying to let people think that he's actually had a relationship with the NAACP and he hasn't. It's then to come back instead of saying, you know, I'm sorry and I'm going to set that meeting up and I'm going to talk through their issues with them. It's all political. Well, you know, I mean, people are going to be offended by that, and that's what it's all about. And it really isn't even partisan in that regard. It's more racial. You know, this is an organization that wants to have a voice in this community and thinks it has a legitimate right to talk to the mayor about issues, and he not only doesn't even talk to them, he doesn't even know who they are.
Does he need to do some repair work?
Look, this is political, big-time political, and that's the season for it. He did have lunch or breakfast with the head of the NAACP and the national head of the NAACP shortly after he became mayor, and it was a man at that time that he had breakfast or lunch with, whatever it is. He's got a picture of him in his office that he keeps there all the time. This guy has gone out of his way to work with the African-American community here. He meets regularly with the concerned clergy, with the Urban League, with the Black Expo folks, the 10-Point Coalition. He meets with them all the time. He just got the Charles Williams Award for Excellence from Black Expo, which is the highest award they give. He just had Reverend Harris from 10 Point Coalition last week talk about how this guy spends more time communicating with them, how much they appreciate it. Yeah.
So, my point is, it's a cheap shot?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there were, as I'm told, there were Democrat elected officials at this news conference. So this is a political deal. This guy has worked hard with this community for a long time. And I think he misspoke when he said what he said about the him, not her. Right. But let me also say that she has met with his deputy mayor. She's met with his chief of staff. They ask the NAACP to be part of their coalition. They've asked the NAACP to be part of the coalition, and they turned him down.
If his relationship was so good with the black community, you would think that some of those people would stand up with
him
and say that.
They did. Last week, Charles Harris said from the 10-Point Coalition, talked about how much they appreciate the fact that he listens and communicates with them regularly.
Okay, with Charles Harris. That's great.
Yeah.
Moving
great.
On. The Gannett Corporation laid off 700 employees this week, 2% of its workforce, and the Indianapolis Star was hit disproportionately. 62 people were laid off at the Star, including 26 in the newsroom. Also, the Louisville Courier-Journal closed its Indiana State House Bureau. Indiana Week in Review contributor Leslie Weidenbender was among those who lost their jobs. And by the way, that does not disqualify her from contributing here in the future. Mike McDaniel, what does that say about the future of print journalism?
The problem is, fewer people are counting on print journalism for their information, which I think is sad. But the fact of the matter is, the less advertising they sell, the more these big corporations that have taken over these papers feel like they have to slash the bottom line. And good people are being thrown to the curb because of it, and Leslie being the top example of that. I mean, she's a great reporter. I mean, she's a straight shooter and somebody that didn't deserve this. And the sad part, in that instance, now the people in southern Indiana are going to have to rely on just wire service stories to get whatever news they get about what's going on in the State House. And that's just wrong. I mean, it's just too bad for the situation to go like that.
Will this lead to newspaper competition from local ownership?
It could, and that would be a healthy
That'd
development.
That'd be a great thing.
I mean, it could go, not to analogize this, but it could go the way of beers. You know, you had everything consolidated, and now you've got all these microbrew. I hope it does, because I think there's a real market for people who want to read stories in depth and to appreciate good reporting. And this constant looking at the bottom line by these large chain owners means that, you know, they think they can just cut and paste the news, and that's all they're doing.
You left the newspaper business.
Yeah, I did. I used to work for the Indianapolis Star. I also had worked for a locally owned business newspaper. And I will say there is a large difference in the way that the attitude is taken by the different kinds of ownership. I think it's important to note that Gannett's still making money. Gannett made $541 million last year. And they've decided that that's not enough to satisfy shareholders. And the way that they're going to fix that is by reducing costs as opposed to trying to raise revenue, which I'm sure they're trying to do. But other publicly owned newspaper companies have not cut the people who produce what it is that they sell.
Right.
We won't require you to comment on this since you still work for a newspaper. But
I do, and I work for a locally owned newspaper who has tried to get through these times without layoffs, so I appreciate that.
More power to them.
Finally, how do you say thank you for a $40 million gift? How about naming a hospital after the donor? You'll see the names of real estate developer Sidney Eskenazi and his wife Lois on the new Wishard Hospital being built downtown. The couple donated $40 million to Wishard to go toward the $754 million project. Sidney summed up the decision in just 10 words.
It was just a no-brainer. How could you not?
And Delaney, what does that gift mean to the community?
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, Wishard it has always been an outstanding institution, but this will ratchet it up to an even higher level. And, you know, Sidney has had his detractors over the years. People who have done business with him have had a lot of negative things to say about him in the past. But it seems to me if this is a ticket punching to get into heaven, it's a pretty good punch to get him there, despite the detractors.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.